listening to Scopes Monkey Choir.
Take two. Scopes Monkey Choir, the podcast where... No, please.
No! Take three.
So, hi, welcome to Scopes Monkey Choir.
The podcast where music and sound, science and skepticism, and your voice meets mine. I'm Hai Ting.
I'm Matt. This is episode 79. We've had so much coffee. Okay. To start off, I just want to mention that there's a new album was just released called Science Fair, and it has all sorts of cool music by the likes of Mates of State, Babe Blue Ox, Muna Luna, Elizabeth Mitchell, etc. Lots of people.
Of fantastic New York indie rockers who also write some music for children. This is kind of a children's album.
Yeah, sort of, not really. But the reason we're mentioning it is that it's a benefit album. It's raising money for science and engineering education for girls.
Woohoo!
So we will put a link in the show page, and everyone should go and buy it for both the musical quality and the beneficial, societal beneficial aspect.
Yeah, a lot of the music is also science. Well, most of the music has some kind of science theme. And they used my title.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah,
Science Fair. My show is called Science Fair.
Yeah, you came up with the term.
I put those words together for the first time in history.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, what's this sound?
Oh, it's you practicing piano.
That's right. Is it right?
It's you practicing guitar. Also.
Tell us. I didn't read this
it's
thing.
It's so you jogging around the block.
That's me, no.
In case you haven't guessed from our cryptic idiocy, there was a new study that suggests that you can learn to play piano in your sleep. At least that's what the headline said. But really what it is just following on some studies that have shown that you can reinforce skills that you've learned while you're awake by
sleeping.
By being subjected to various stimulus while you're sleeping.
Oh, I see.
And the research that it follows on has shown that all kinds of things can be reinforced. For instance, your spatial memory can be reinforced by being subjected to certain smell and sound cues that are related to to spatial memorization that you've done.
Hmm.
And this exposure usually happens in the deepest part of sleep.
Hmm.
Let me describe the latest study, which is learning to play piano. And there are huge air quotes around that because no pianos were involved in this study.
Right.
No pianos were harmed during the conducting of this study.
So it's one of these learning to play piano in your sleep, but there's no piano, there's no learning, and there's no sleep.
No, there was plenty of sleep.
Oh, okay. Basically, a bunch of scientists got grant money to just take naps.
To watch other people taking naps.
All right, please.
Please tell us about June 24th, Nature Neuroscience. 16 volunteers, 16 subjects, that's what they call them when they're involved in scientific studies. They learned to play a not very catchy tune using their computer keyboards. Four keys on their computer keyboards, representing four different pitches.
Okay.
And it was in the article they compared it to Dance Dance Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
They compared it to Guitar Hero, where they were watching colored dots on a screen and they had to play a certain note that corresponded to each color and a key on the keyboard. So they learned these little tunes, two different tunes that they tried to practice accuracy for a certain amount of time, and then they were asked to take a nap. Apparently, in this lab, they have seats that recline to comfortable beds.
Okay.
So better than an airplane, definitely, unless you're in first class. And they were asked to take a 90-minute nap, which to me was the most striking thing about this study. Actually, in a lot of nap studies, they ask people to nap for 90 minutes because it seems to be the optimal period for getting all the way into REM sleep.
Uh-huh.
You don't just have a little cat nap. Apparently in 20 minutes, you don't go into your deepest sleep. You have to nap for 90 minutes.
Well, not that REM sleep is your deepest sleep. But
oh,
yeah.
Did I get that wrong?
Yes, you did.
REM sleep?
REM? Crab sleep.
Crab sleep. What is the deepest part of sleep?
Also, it was just called deep sleep. REM is on the...
Slow wave sleep.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go. REM sleep is on either end, is right. the non-deep part of your sleep. So in a 90-minute nap, you can get into slow wave sleep.
Lobster sleep.
Which is the slow wave sleep. It's the period of sleep in which your brain waves do that thing where they sort of pass through your brain in even waves, mm-hmm. exactly like that, yes, mm-hmm. like that. So once the researchers had determined that the nappers were in slow wave sleep, they played back to them one of these tunes. Now remember, they had learned to play two different tunes right. on their keyboard. And then they woke them up at the end of 90 minutes and they had them redo the trials mm-hmm. for both tunes. And they found that they were much better at the one that they had listened to than the one that
When
they were asleep. Although they had practiced them when they were awake for the same amount of time.
And presumably they had more than one group. So it wasn't all...
This is part of the question in the study. There were only 16 of them.
Right.
And they were all played back one of the tunes.
The same.
So the same tune.
So it could just be that
no,
tune...
No, they weren't played back. They didn't have a control group that heard nothing. But so in this case, since there were only 16, a very small sample, they were their own control group. So they just compared their performance on the tune that they had not listened to their performance on the tune that they had listened to. And I cannot say from the reporting whether it was the same tune for all 16 of them.
Right, because that would basically nullify it.
Yeah, I was presuming that it was not, because it seems to me that that would nullify it.
Well, they wouldn't be able to separate
the data
if they played the same song back to everyone, then it could just be that song is a little catchier. Anyway, I mean, it seems like an interesting beginning.
Yes, in an interview, one of the scientists said, "I think your brain does a lot of triaging at night. Now, you're trying to override that triaging and tell your brain what it should be worrying about. I would argue that sleep might be smarter than you." So basically, don't bother. That this might concentrate your brain on something. But he was suggesting that maybe all it's doing is pushing out the learning that you did on the other tune.
Of course, that's all
speculative, but he's a neuroscientist, so he has a better basis on which to speculate than I do.
Right.
But,
yeah.
you know, basically suggesting that you might be losing other stuff if you concentrate your brain on one thing.
Well, it'll be interesting to see.
It definitely will be interesting to see as it follows up.
So, did they say anything about the sound quality? Whether it was like MP3 quality or CD quality?
Oh, my God.
What?
In the reporting, they use the phrase, "not very catchy," which suggests all kinds of things to me.
You didn't catch on. I'm trying to segue.
Segue.
I'm trying to segue to find out, does Generation Y prefer low-res sound?
Oh, I should have known you were trying to segue to that.
Yes, you should have.
Why would you think that Generation Y prefers low-res sound?
That is a question I have, actually. But let's mention why we're talking about this.
Well, I find this study actually not very fun, and I'm not even sure.
Well,
it's really
barely
really
a study.
It is a study, and the scientist who conducted it is a scientist, but he also works for an audio company. He's a scientist and a professor at a university. His name is Dr. Sean Olive. He played some music, some of it MP3 quality and some of it CD quality, for groups of listeners, and he asked them which they preferred, and he found some of them were college students.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were college students, and a couple of them were highly trained listeners who work for speaker companies and audio companies, mm-hmm. so people who are trained to listen for quality. And he found that the students also preferred CD quality samples. Mm-hmm. So there were 58 students and 140 samples.
Oh, okay.
Here's the thing. In 70% of the cases, everyone preferred the high quality. Mm-hmm. Now, that does leave 30% in which they either did not prefer or did not notice or actually preferred the MP3. So it's not, I'm not even sure that that's a strong I'm not sure that that's a
It's a pretty good sample size. I mean, if they have that many different audio samples, that's pretty good.
That's true. And he did it for another group of students who were native Japanese speakers.
Mm.
I'm not exactly sure why. I wonder if he thinks that native Japanese speakers have more discerning ears. That seems weird. But in any case, or maybe he just had access to an additional large group of Japanese-speaking high school students for some reason. In any case, everyone basically seemed to prefer CD quality sound.
Right.
When they're played back through good speakers. And the reporting seems to suggest that there's stuff, at least in the popular culture, saying that the common wisdom seems to be that Gen Y doesn't care or even prefers MP3 sound or low quality sound.
And I looked into that a little bit.
And what'd you find?
I can't really find much indication of that. This actually got a fair amount of coverage, and I looked at some of the other coverage, and everyone talks about how, you know, even the New York Times claims that Gen Y prefers low res sound. And so I tried for quite a while to find, and of course no one links to the New York Times where they say that. I tried for quite a while to find anywhere in the New York Times where they have said anything like that. I couldn't find anything. And then I did a more general search to find whether this is a meme out there, and it just doesn't seem to be.
I don't
know what I'm missing. If anyone out here listening, if anyone off the top of their head knows of, you know, of instances of this meme, please let me know. But it doesn't seem to ever, almost when I put in all these different search terms, everything that comes up seems to be pointing to this article or other articles about this same study. So this
is non-news.
I think this is non-news.
These were just blog posts, and most of them were just opinion, and most of them seem to indicate that the idea is that market research shows that Gen Y prefers lower quality sound, but then almost everybody then goes on to say that's just because that's all they can afford.
Yeah,
it's sort of non-news.
Yeah, I think this may be a little spillover from Marketing Wars, you know, which is not...
That was the impression that I got.
I think we've given them too much time. Hey, do you want to talk about iMusic?
Oh, can we become synesthetes artificially?
Can we? That is the question. Maybe. Someday.
This is more specific, actually, what you're talking about, right?
And iMusic as in E-Y-E, not as in I, the letter I.
Oh,
as in,
man, that's,
I
talk about marketing.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Are we even allowed to say that?
So yeah, converting images into music for the visually impaired.
Maybe a bit of an exaggeration. But
this is a new development in what is called sensory substitution devices. This has been developed by the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, and they're calling it iMusic. Here's the basic idea is that it's a device that scans an image and then converts the image into a combination of musical notes or soundscapes, they call them. So they scan the image, and then the horizontal of the image is represented by the timing, and the brightness is represented by the volume. The vertical is represented by pitch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they go further where they actually have different timbres of sound representing different colors.
I think the best thing maybe to do is to play the square and the triangles, and people can actually hear those.
First, I'm going to play the blue to green, the two little
two
the
triangles,
blue triangles
side by side.
So this is blue to green triangle. So there you can hear the timbre change from the blue to the green.
And you can kind of hear the shape of the triangles.
Yeah, yeah, you can a little
now,
bit.
Now, it must be said that that sound sample is, along with all the other ones that we will play and that you can hear, is basically representing just a square or a rectangular flat screen.
Right.
And the researchers suggest that eventually you might be able to use this in the actual world, but it starts to get really complicated as the images get more complicated.
Right. I'm going to go to the flower. First, I'm going to play... this is a little image of a flower, and this is the grayscale version. And here's a image of the same image of the flower, but this time it's in color.
So as while it's really easy to imagine how the first one represents two triangles of two different colors sitting side by side, it's really hard to connect the flower images to the sound that you're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
But the concept is tried and true, that basically they're remapping across senses, that they're making some kind of sound correspond to some kind of physical object. In this case, only two-dimensional.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you started to say that they're using different timbres for different colors.
Right.
And I think that part of our problem with these sound samples is that the timbres are really hard to distinguish from one
another. Well, they all just sort of sound like cheap keyboard sounds, you know? And they claim that they, you know, they consulted with musicians to find really pleasing sounds. Well, no, you didn't.
I'm imagining the consulting went like this. Okay, which of these sounds sounds the least horrible to you?
Right, yeah. But this is all within the framework of the researchers themselves are just saying that they're demonstrating the feasibility of this approach.
Yes.
They're not claiming that, you know, and this is all actually wrapped up in a study where they actually had a control group where they're actually trying to show that this is feasible, this is a good approach, this is worth pursuing. And it seems totally reasonable to me that, in the, you know, that if you keep developing this, like, why not? Like, why not have a camera affixed to your forehead or something, and then you have little earpieces, and as you turn around, you have the actual like visual scape translated into sound. Like, why not? It seems like there are all sorts of possibilities.
And it seems like it's not totally out of the blue. First of all, it's been shown that people can learn to sort of do a sonar.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's an amazing video of the guy bicycling.
Right, yeah.
It's not similar, but it's kind of related in terms of how we can make our sense of hearing correspond to what a normally sighted person would see. We can use these two senses, if not interchangeably, we can remap.
Right.
We can use aural information for spatial mapping.
Right.
And also, there is previous research into using pitched sounds to correspond to spatial, or the one definite study that I came up with is from 2010 in the Montreal Neurological Institute, where they showed that they could teach people to have sound information correspond to shape, that people could map shapes with great consistency using, it doesn't look like it's, from the description in the abstract, it doesn't look like it's a sonar effect, but it uses something similar to this latest study where they have somehow pitch corresponding to shape.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed that people can very consistently figure out what shape things are using pitch information that's mapped from a computer.
Right. One of the things going to be interesting to see is as technology develops, and also they develop these techniques, who's going to win out? These people who are developing remapping techniques for the visually impaired, and the medical researchers who are just day after day getting better and better at just curing blindness and things like that. Like, you know, there's starting to be some real headway made in just sort of actually just helping the visually impaired see better, you know? So
yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see sort of who wins in the end, as it were. Not that
my impression of reading this research from Israel was that it's kind of a novelty and sort of exhilarating fun to try to make these sounds correspond to the pictures.
Mm.
And I would suggest for anyone that's interested that you follow the links that we will put in our show notes and look at the images and listen to the sounds that correspond to them. They're sort of in increasing complexity. And at the beginning, you can really hear how the sound equals the shape, and then as they get increasingly complex, it becomes a game, or it became a game for me to try to figure out whether I could hear what I was seeing.
Right.
But of course, that's all from already seeing it, and I don't know how much of what I was thinking that I could hear was
right
from already seeing it. But in any case, it was a really interesting sensation.
Right.
And I was thinking how it could kind of become a video game sort of thing.
Everything can be.
Yeah.
The one last thing I wanted to say is I like the example they gave of possible real world applications of, they just had a simple example of if you're shopping, a visually impaired person is shopping and they need to get apples. Just by hearing a different sound, they could tell which apple is red and which is green.
Yes.
And that's, it's like, it's really a satisfying, simple thing of just a red apple is going to sound different than a green apple.
Yes. Very simple and very cool. One of my problems with the study was the idea that the position of the object has to be indicated by the time element. So obviously, what they're doing right now is limited to just a square of computer screen, and they're using that timing to show the position of the object. But
right.
That's all they have come up with to show the position of the object. And in addition, with their research, they have put out little pictures of a guy wearing glasses and a camera and picking out a red apple from a green apple, as you said, picking out the red from the green in the bowl. And the suggestion is that the technology that they've come up with could be transferred directly. I mean, they've made a leap visually on their literature mm-hmm. to say, look what we can do with your glasses. But as you say, it would be a completely different thing. If they went out into the world, they'd have to have...
They'd have to have filters and such, because it would just be constant overwhelming sound if you were literally translating everything that your camera saw into sound. It would be overwhelming.
Yeah, so but, with the current procedure...
Yeah, I mean, we don't know that they actually put out that picture, but...
I think they did. I thought they did.
We don't know. It's not in the paper. But yeah, in any case, they're just starting. This is a little feasibility study. That's all, you know?
The picture is kind of hilarious, too, because it has in reverse a visual stream of music with big colored notes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, very scientific there.
And next week, we're going to be at the Amazing Meetings, so it's very unlikely that there will be an episode. In fact, it's pretty much impossible.
Well, if there is one, it will be us randomly talking to people at TAM.
Yeah, but that won't come out next weekend. Anyway, we'll see.
Will be no episode next weekend, but there might be a very exciting one after that.
There might be none. No promises. No promise. I know.
Well, come to TAM and see us.
Yeah.
I'll be talking on the panel about skepticism and the humanities. I don't actually have a schedule for when that is yet, but I'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
If you see us, come and say hi. We would love to talk to you.
And thank you for listening to Scopes Monkey Choir. From scopesmonkeychoir.com, which is a website.
We are professional musicians.
Not scientists.
Not scientists.
Don't believe us, but each episode's page has references and citations and links and blah, blah, blah. We love feedback.
Write us a review on iTunes or send us an email.
You can also call the monkey phone and leave a message at 347-788-0330. And... Did we say scopesmonkeychoir@gmail.com?
I tweet at scopesmonkeys, although not very often.
I occasionally tweet @squidocto. And I'm going to press stop. Is that all right?
Press stop.
Okay.